Hello and welcome to this episode of Bloodhound Picks. As always, I am one of your hosts, Craig.
And I'm Josh.
Okay, and this episode is going back to kind of our main subject of a double feature, which is my pick. And I picked two films. Originally, there was going to be a different theme, but one of the movies is hard to find in the United States. And so had to kind of go back and forth on some, but I think the theme connects enough. We deal with kind of the element of a loop or spiral. I probably have already given it away. One of them is an adaptation from a manga. The other one has a comic book adaptation on about the movie, I guess is the way to say it. And then, yeah, I'll just give what they are. It is 2004's Uzumaki, based on Junji Ito's Uzumaki, which means spiral. And then Thomas Jane's Dark Country from, I believe it was 08, right? Or 09, yes, 09. And so, my story, when Josh and I first met, he is a big Thomas Jane fan. But he only watched Hung and Punisher. He was like, well, I'm a big horror fan too. And I haven't. And so I think Thomas Jane should do all these horror films. I said, what? You haven't seen? And I listed off all of them. And I told him about Dark Country and introduced him to all of that. And that is 100% of how that story went.
Yeah, I definitely remember it happening just yes. Like that.
I wanted to actually do these because I think it plays in a different way too, where, so I'm a big, as we've talked about on this podcast, Junji Ito fan. This is our first time watching Uzumaki, all three of us, the movie itself, but I kind of held off for a very long time because there's so many people that have said, well, if you're a fan of the book, the movie doesn't like work up to it, or don't even bother with it. But so I've read the book several times throughout the years. Kyle had just read the book right before he watched the movie, and Josh hasn't read the book but watched the movie. So I'm interested to see kind of the differences. And then same with Dark Country. Josh, it is one of his favorite films, thanks to me. And he's read the comic book. I've watched the movie twice. And then I just bought the comic book. It came in today right before we started recording, so I was able to read it. And then Kyle watched it for the first time, and so we have three kind of different opinions. But let's start with Uzumaki, which is, again, from 04, or, well, 2000, but it came to the United States, I believe, in 04. So a lot of Junji Ito's work in describing it, it doesn't sound like it's creepy at all. It doesn't sound like it can be scary. It's not necessarily my favorite of his, but it's considered his masterpiece, my favorite to even describe it. And say, oh, well, there's this story about these fish on mechanical legs going around and they bring a death stench. Sounds stupid. I completely understand, but it is surprisingly well effective. And that was the second one we were going to try and do. But because they animated it, the Tokyo Fish Attack is what it's called. But yeah, you just can't really find it here. So with Uzumaki, or Spiral, as it's known here, I will just read the IMDb, and it's the inhabitants of a small Japanese town become increasingly obsessed with and tormented by spirits. So,
not true at all.
Yeah, or by, sorry, I guess it was a miss thing. I went to a different one. By spirals, that is the. So describing that, it's a hard one to talk about, but really the manga, to not get into too much spoilers, about half of it or so, it plays very episodically, where it's Kiri, who is describing basically the what's happening to the town. It'll be like, oh, this happened to this character or these students or whatever, and it's each one is spiral related, but it's kind of a series of different things that are loosely connected because they're all in the same town, but not really. And then the other half of the manga kind of loses some steam, in my opinion. Kyle can bring in his too, because he just read it, but then it tries to connect everything in a way, and it tries to kind of tell a story finally, but the movie, even though it's so episodic, the movie tries to make a feature out of this while also keeping it episodic. But yeah, before we get into it more, the only other thing I'll say is that there are differences because the manga hadn't been finished during that time either. So like the ending is different than the ending in the book and stuff like that. But so Josh, actually, yeah, that's a great point. Josh, since you didn't read the book, how did you, because you sent a message to me while watching it that you really liked Uzumaki, or at least that you could talk a lot about. Yeah. So I'm really curious to see what you loved about it and to hear.
I mean, I guess the simplest answer is that it doesn't really make any sense. And it was really like just weird, and like kind of a way that only, you know, Japanese can do, because I mean, you know, honestly, it's taking a spiral, which is, let's be honest, the most boring artwork ever created, and they're like, all these characters are talking about how awesome it is and this, that, and the other thing, and it's just like, what? No. And you know, obviously everybody is becoming, I don't even know what they're becoming. They're becoming like infected in some way. None of it makes sense either, which, you know, you're either going to really like it or you're not. And I didn't have any problem with it. I guess maybe because I sort of knew that it was going to be really fucking weird. I didn't know that it wasn't going to make sense, but that didn't really bother me. Because I mean, let's be honest, you get into what, like half hour into the thing, and if you don't kind of know what you're going to be in store for, you know, by that point. So yeah, I mean, I thought it was good. It was definitely never boring. And, yeah, it just wasn't that satisfying either, I suppose. The main character was also one of the more annoying things about the movie. And I think it was just due to the fact that, like, you know, her boyfriend is basically at minute 15 telling her that they should leave this fucking place because there's this weird shit going on. And she just refuses to listen to anybody, even though she's witnessing weird shit going on and people dying. And it's just like, it literally takes the entire movie for her to acknowledge that, yeah, these people are probably right. You should probably leave. Yeah. So that was kind of annoying, but I guess, you know, I guess what I will say is the character seemed like it was just one cliche after another. Mm-hmm. You know, she's like this school girl type character almost. I mean, that's probably not accurate, but in a lot of ways, and she's not very smart. So I don't know. I mean, honestly, that was the most annoying thing. That was the thing that I didn't like the most, was that character, because it was just like, Jesus Christ, How many more things have to happen for you to get it through your fucking head that, yeah, dude, there's some weird shit going on. So, I mean, I guess if that's the worst thing for me to complain about, really wasn't that bad.
No, it's interesting because so much of the movie to me, it feels like they're trying to keep the episodic nature, but it almost feels like a greatest hits album of the book, where it's like, you know, it has there's a hair sequence in it that it plays out bigger in the book, obviously. There's a snail people sequence again, but they bring in all these little sequences that have a whole section to themselves in the manga, and then they're like, oh, we just gotta throw it all in. And yeah, by the time you reach the end, it's like, oh, but we're also trying to make a feature out of this and tell a narrative feature or something. But no, I really like, I think both of these movies that we're talking about today have a Lynchian kind of influence too, or at least can be considered in that sense. Yeah, the news crew actually plays a huge part, which in the movie they kind of just pop up, and they're just, yeah. And then there's like the other journalist who I can't remember. I feel like he's not in the book.
Yeah.
To try and make sense of it, where the book itself, there's really no ever an explanation to the spiral. Where this, there's like that quick flash of like serpent cult or whatever is flashing on the screen or stuff like that. Yeah, because there's that one where you see the car driving and you're watching out the front window, and that slowly like fades into the two of them talk. Yeah. And no, I think there's some great shots in that sense, and it really does make you like, I was looking in every shot to see if I could find a spiral, because there's moments where they digitally kind of move the dirt to make a spiral. The camera even like moves in a spiral formation at times, or so. I mean, you're looking for it, which I give. And I think there's like what you were saying, Josh, there's some weird moments too, where there's, you'll just see people standing around and they're just walking by them like nothing, and but standing around in a very kind of creepy way. And yeah, everything, and it's just very off in the movie. But no, I think
it did kind of become one of those games of, at least for me, after I started noticing that there were literally spirals almost in every frame of the movie, I was just like, it became a game of, let's see how long it takes me to find whatever the spiral in this frame, because they were literally fucking everywhere.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to get a number of how many times there was one, just, you know, not the ones where it was like CGI, because that happened. Obviously that was a lot more noticeable, but I mean, I can't even remember like specific parts, but they were in a lot of the shots, like, you know, almost hidden, to where it's like, let's play this game of where can I spot the spiral?
For those of you listening, if you want to give us money on our Patreon, we will go through Uzumaki and find every spiral again. I'd go with Josh of that. If I didn't read the book, I think I'd probably like it a lot better. I want to say, and I liked it the way it is now, and I think like it works well. But yes, it really does become like, knowing what happens in the book and knowing how it goes about, you kind of wish, well, just stick with then, if you're going to do it that way, one of the stories, like just stick with the father or some, I don't know, or something to just kind of condense it. Or I don't know, it would have to be a mini series type of, if you're going based kind of more traditionally off of the manga itself. No, because I think it was, the movie is about 90 minutes. I think maybe a couple minutes. Yeah. And I think it was an hour and 15, I was looking at the time going, wait, nothing's really happened. So when is this plot gonna, like, when's this resolution gonna pick up? And it did, like, very quickly at the end, there's some sort of resolution, which Yeah, but the ending in this one I actually prefer. I know Kyle, you said the same thing to the ending in the book, but it does just come out of nowhere that it doesn't seem earned, I guess. Because in the book, Shuichi, the boyfriend, he goes crazy. His parents suffer a fate, to not give too much spoiler. He kind of goes crazy and then he just disappears for a long chunk of the book. And then he pops up, he pops up randomly throughout until the end. Yeah, and yeah, some characters were kind of merged together into one, to, you know, obviously fit the feature length and stuff like that. But I don't know. I can't wait for the Adult Swim version. When it was supposed to come out, I thought last year, but, and that's kind of Junji Ito's work in itself, I think. Like, it's so, and there's a lot of manga like that where there are a lot of elements that you would almost need CGI to help enhance it that you couldn't accomplish with practical effects in a cheap enough way. But then to do it in CGI would also look kind of not great either. So it, you know, but I know there's a lot of manga. You know, do you talk about Akira, anything where it doesn't cross over well to a live action format? Anything else on Uzumaki?
Well, one of you, I can't remember which one of you was talking about. I think it was you, Craig, that like nothing really happens. But I will say that the plot, if that's what you want to call it, in this movie, it's very repetitive, yeah, like a fucking spiral, yeah, like same shit happens over and over and over and over. Obviously it's different. Like, for instance, you mentioned the kid that that is in love with the main character. How many times did he like jump out and scare her to the point where it was just like, punch that kid in the face, first of all. But you know, that's just one example of something, yeah, happening repeatedly, and it's there's obviously more than just, yeah, that instance. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but I guess if it wasn't, they did a good job of making it kind of noticeable anyway.
Yeah.
In their spiral movie.
Yeah. So that is Uzumaki, also known as Spiral. If I don't even know how to find it if you want to watch it in the States, because there are a DVD, there are physical copies, but like $40 for I think is what I found on eBay or stuff like that. So it's a pretty difficult find. Hopefully when the Adult Swim version comes out, they actually do a re-release or something, because I mean, I don't know, maybe in earning my, or trying to get my Junji Ito collection, I want to try and get the movies too, but yeah, alas. Okay. So next up we have Dark Country from 2009, which is directed by Thomas Jane, written by Tad Murphy, and also stars Thomas Jane, Ron Perlman, Lauren German, and here, let me see, the IMDb of synopsis of this says, a couple en route from Las Vegas are forced to deal with a body out in the desert, making their honeymoon one hellish ride. So that is the IMDb synopsis. So basically the movie in itself is, again, we kind of talked about the Lynchian element. There will be some spoilers, so I don't want to give too much away, but there's also a lot of comic book influence, even though it wasn't adapted from a comic book. The way it's shot is very stylized, and it's kind of, they get lost in the desert and it becomes kind of a loop-like scenario. I'm trying to say this without spoiling too much, but that becomes apparent pretty early on, that they just can't escape this desert. They hit somebody with their car. he becomes aggressive. They kill him. They bury the body, but then all these other strange things start happening. And yeah, that is pretty much it. It feels very Twilight Zone-esque in a way, but since Josh, it's one of his favorite movies, I will let him go first and kind of really talk about it because, yeah, he loves the movie. He's even talked on Q&As with Thomas Jane about it. He got, I think, a signed copy of stuff from it. And take it away, Josh.
All right. Yeah. So I talked to Thomas Jane a little bit about Dark Country because it is one of my favorite films of all time. I don't really care that there's some issues with it. So we talked about how they did a comic adaptation of it, which, you know, there's no dialogue in the comic. But it's sort of interesting that it is very, the direction of the movie is pretty amazing, I think, anyway. I mean, it's just the style of the directing fits the film so well. And it is very comic bookish. It's like almost like Sin City type. I mean, it's obviously not that, you know, drastic, but he sent me the book, and he also sent me his personal director's cut of the film. Very nice man. I personally don't like the director's cut as much, because it's shorter. Normally that would be an instant turn on for me, but essentially in the director's cut of the movie, at the very beginning, Thomas Jane, Lauren German are at a motel before they kind of set out on their journey. And in the scene, in the theatrical cut, there's a bit where Thomas Jane's character goes into this whole story about basically, you know, his love life, sort of. And it takes up a significant amount of time. I mean, that whole thing is cut in the director's cut. So essentially it hits the ground running. And there's literally nothing, there's no fat. I think the director's cut was like maybe 78 minutes or something. And I think the other one was like 80 something or other.
Yeah.
There's definitely some problems with the logic of this movie. I don't really give a shit about those. But let's be honest, a lot of times when you're dealing with plots of this sort, you almost are gonna invariably have some kind of logic issue. Just because time travel plots, etc., you know, you got a lot to kind of keep straight in your mind and be, you know, get across to the viewer and not be, you know, missing stuff or whatever it may be. But so in also speaking of the comic influences, the character of the guy they hit with the car is played by Thomas Jane also, but the design of the character, because he's basically like completely fucked up to the point where you can't tell what his face looks like, that was designed by Bernie Wrightson, the late Bernie Wrightson. And then also Tom Jane's partner from his comic studio, Raw Studios, Tim Bradstreet, also did some design work. I can't remember specifically what it was, but very heavily comic influenced in numerous ways. So, I think if you could if I could label like a film that is like 100% my sensibility, this would be it. I could go on for a while about this movie.
You can go on longer if you want. I mean,
I haven't said anything yet, so.
Okay. Yeah, it is very much noir in its style, and yeah, comic book style, and
I almost think that they should have. I mean, I know it was Tab Murphy's the writer, as Craig mentioned. I almost feel like they should have incorporated Lauren German into, you know, just to give it a little bit more, so it wasn't just so focused on Thomas Jane. But I mean, that's neither here nor there. And speaking of the 3D, this is I've seen this film hundreds of times, and I almost bought the 3D version of the Blu-ray because I'm such a dork. I don't have any way to actually see it in 3D though. But the only way, the Blu-ray, that it doesn't exist on Blu-ray other than that. And it's a French Blu-ray too. So it's not even United States region, you know? But I almost bought it anyway, just to say I fucking have it. But yeah, you can totally tell where everything is supposed to be 3D, and I think it would make the movie better, because those shots would just look amazing, at least to me.
Yeah. Well, even a lot of the places, the rest stops they stop at, are all made to look like very old, and I don't know. So yeah, but it is one of those strange ones, logic based too, because it has that time travel element, but also there's like that purgatory type element to it. I don't know. There's like trying to decide what one to do. Yeah. I mean, because the only information you really get is that the couple met fairly recently before they got married.
Yeah, it was like literally the night before.
Yeah. And then that's about it. Without, you know, obviously spoiling anything for anybody that hasn't watched it, you definitely should. But then there's some secrets about him that are kind of hinted at, but never necessarily revealed. I don't know. Yeah, but I would agree with Kyle. There's never anything that would dictate why they would be in a purgatory or what they would have done, besides, you know, just a couple that got married, you know, after a night of drinking or whatever in Las Vegas and decided to drive through the desert.
I think it's just supposed to be one of those things where it's like, well, it's happened to him because he just happened to be, you know, it's just completely circumstantial. But yeah, I think normally, or it would seem anyway, that in plots in films, TV, whatever, where you have characters that are in a purgatory, they're obviously most of the time there because they're a shitty person, or, you know, or some variation of that.
But I would agree with you, Josh, that I kind of wish that Lauren German was involved more. And then even what you were saying, Kyle, of having Ron Perlman pop up more, or even be more of a sinister presence, I don't know, or something, to just bring both of those characters to the forefront more, because so much of it is just kind of Thomas Jane wandering around through the desert for parts of it. You know, Ron Perlman seems to do that with a lot of filmmakers. They just kind of will show up for them to like throw himself in for, because he did that for one movie we might do at some point, I Sell the Dead, where I think he worked with Last I Picks before, and he was, so he kind of showed up for a day or two to do that. Other movies as well. But Josh, this is your moment to shine. Do you have any more to talk about for Dark Country?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, it's you could go on about, you know, getting into sort of the things that don't make sense, even though it's clearly not trying to not make sense. Sorry, that sounded stupid, but you know, there, and the logic issues that appear, basically they come like one right after the other. Yeah. At about minute 75 70. Yeah. Something like that. But you know, I mean, it's probably not worth getting into. I mean, it's certainly not to me, because it doesn't bother me. I get what the fucking intention was. So, you know, yeah, it's interesting too, in speaking in terms of the plot, you know, you got Thomas Jane and Lauren German in a car driving for what, 75% of the plot.
Yeah.
And then at the moment that they split up, which Kyle mentioned, and Ron Perlman just comes into the film literally out of fucking nowhere. So they're driving, you know, on this road, on this highway in the desert between Nevada and California or Arizona, yeah, whatever. And there's literally not a single car ever, right? It's creepy as hell. But then Ron Perlman, he's a cop, and he just shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then it goes from like that moment, then there's a whole bunch more characters that come into the movie.
Yeah.
In the form of, you know, however many police officers, which is an interesting kind of, I mean, I'm glad they did it, because it kind of changed shit up like, yeah, considerably. So yeah, I mean, it's a great movie. And if you're a fan of the Twilight Zone, for damn sure, you're gonna love this. If you haven't seen it, we're talking about a film that's what, 11 years old now, but
yeah, I know a lot of people, I don't think they have. And but even because he also direct Give 'Em Hell, Maloney, or did he just kind of produce it and vehicle? Yeah, okay, that was like a starring vehicle.
Yeah, okay. It's Russell Mulcahy. Okay. Was the director. Okay.
But I know,
but apparently, speaking of that, apparently that's, they're making a sequel to that.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that one. I plan on it. And then with his new production. Oh, fuck yeah,
that one's great.
Yeah. I'm glad I introduced you to that one too.
Yeah, me too.
But no, I know that he has Renegade Entertainment now, because Ross Studios, from what I looked up, is kind of non-existent, even though the website's there and still working. It's kind of all transitioned over to that other one, and Renegade Entertainment. But yeah, they're talking about the Give 'Em Hell, Maloney sequel. And I think, I don't know, he seems to really love the comic book approach and, you know, just being stylistic and stuff like that. But I know he's talked about directing again, but, and there's some comic books, I think, still in the, that he's been working on. But yeah, he has a lot of projects that he's been working on for a long time, and yet we keep seeing him in, you know, Breach or things like that, which don't get to utilize his talent to the best of his ability.
And Run, yeah, Hide, Fight.
Yeah. No, I mean, he is. You just wish you saw him more as like the, you know, main characters and stuff like that. But
yeah, so I also have one of the original posters for this film that don't they don't exist now. It's actually, I'm staring at it right now. And I got I got one of the cast and crew shirts.
Oh.
Which obviously those don't exist anymore either. So I don't wear it all that often, because I'd want it to last forever.
Yeah.
And it's a shirt, so it's not going to last forever.
You should, there's those, there's those frame, the, where you can put like the jerseys in or whatever, just put the shirt in.
Oh yeah.
With all the other, your, if you get the Blu-ray, all that stuff, put in a big frame.
Yeah. I was still looking at getting that, that Blu-ray, because I have an all region player. So the French region, I don't really give a shit about, but it would be really nice to see that film in 3D though, just because yeah. I think it would really change. I mean a lot, because, you know, like Kyle said, not every shot in the movie is in 3D.
Yeah.
But the ones that are, you know, you can obviously tell, because like you said, the, you know, the composite just looks really like off. So I would love to see it in 3D though. Right.
So maybe when this pandemic is under control, we can, if those of you interested, again, for hearing this episode, we can, the two of us, Kyle, can make a trip to Iowa. Josh, you can get that 3D copy, and we'll do an audio commentary on Dark Country. Yeah. Okay, so we have to get a 3D TV.
I think you just need a player.
No, I think you need both, from what I remember. It's, you need the 3D player and a 3D TV. And then
fuck that. Yeah, because, I would agree with that.
Because I was going to get I almost got a 3D player because of my love of Dread, the 2012 one. I heard that it in 3D looks so incredible. And then yeah, I looked at all the prices. I was like, I'm fine with it being in 2D, I guess. Okay. Well, so I think that is our episode on Uzumaki and Dark Country. Of course, if you like Dark Country, if you liked Uzumaki, or if you hated them, send us your comments, rate us.
Not me, though.
Yeah. Tell us all your thoughts, and yeah, of course, like, subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. And also, if you have any suggestions for kind of truly independent horror or dark genre movies, as I guess they're called, and or obscure movies that we haven't covered yet, please send them our way, because obviously we've been doing this for some time now, and we're yeah,
we have seen everything.
Yeah So send us suggestions of obscure or truly independent films. And yeah, until next time, thank you for listening.
Bloodhound Pigs Podcast is part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network, produced by Josh Lee, Craig Drum, and Kyle Hintz. Music by Raymond Seed. Editing by Kyle Hintz.